From KXCV KRNW, it's Now Showing with your host, Patty Hawley.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. On today's program, the St. Joseph Symphony and the Northwest Missouri State University Wind Symphony open their seasons this weekend. Native Americans from across the country will gather in Maryville for the Northwest Powwow on Saturday. And a music group gives area men the chance to perform. We'll have these stories plus Dr. Carol Fry's movie review on today's Now Showing. Stay with us. The St. Joseph Symphony opens its season this Saturday evening. Made in America will also feature the new symphony music director, Rico McNeela. Derek Hines is the symphony's executive director.
We're excited about this because we wanted to kick off the season with some exciting music, and in this instance we're doing a program of all American music, and it's familiar music. The Morton Gould American Salute is based on the theme of When Johnny Comes Marching Home. So when people hear that piece, they'll be able to pick out that melody and say, oh, yeah, I know what this is. And just a great, fun, lively piece to start off. The Barber Adagio for Strings is a very, very popular piece. Many people have it on their CDs or their iPods and that sort of thing, and we know they'll enjoy that. And we'll finish the first half with Aaron Copland's Lincoln Portrait. Hard to get more American than that. And on the 200th anniversary of Lincoln's birth, we thought it was an appropriate piece to perform. And then the second half is a very beloved piece in the classical literature, and that's the New World Symphony, Anton Dvorak. And it's just a tremendous piece and fun to listen to. It'll fill the hall with sound, and that's what we like. So we think it's a great way to kick things off, and it gives people an opportunity to not only hear the music but to meet our new music director, Rico McNeela, in person. He'll be at our reception in the mezzanine after the concert. He wants to meet everybody and talk to everybody, and so it'll be a good chance to do that.
When and where will the concert be?
We're at the Missouri Theater, which is at 717 Edmund Street in downtown St. Joseph, with ample parking within a block or two in every direction. It's a 7:30 p.m. start time. We historically have started our concerts at 8 o'clock on Saturday nights. We decided to move to 7:30 this year. The 8 o'clock is sort of a holdover from the East Coast when people had to take the train home from work and change and take the train back into the city. We thought since we're here in the Midwest and we're all just driving in anyway, why don't we try it at 7:30? But it'll be Saturday, October the 3rd at the Missouri Theater. You can get tickets. The easiest way to do it is to do it online. We now offer online ticket sales. St. Joseph Symphony, it's all spelled out, S-A-I-N-T, stjosephsymphony.org. And you can buy your tickets directly online. You can buy them by phone. Just give us a call at the number I mentioned, 816-233-7701. Or you can stop by the Symphony office. We're in there 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and that's at 120 South 8th Street, which is just around the corner from the Missouri Theater front door.
That was Executive Director of the St. Joseph Symphony, Derek Hines. Northwest Missouri State University's Wind Symphony opens its season with a concert on Sunday. Director of bands at the university, Carl Kling, says the concert is all about metal.
Each of the selections have either been written for metal instruments or feature a metal instrument or were originally created for metal instruments. We do a traditional thing where we start off every season opener of our concerts with a national anthem. So we have a small group that's going to do a very lyric presentation of that national anthem. And then the formal part of our concert will begin. And that will start off with the Gabrielli's Canzona Noni Toni for 8 brass instruments. It was written in 1597, features trombones, horns, and trumpets, which are brass instruments. And those would have been very commonplace instruments used in the 1500s. And Gabrielli's music is world-renowned as being one of the first antiphonal sets of musics utilized in the church area. The next piece of music on the program is called Prelude Siciliano and Rondo, but it was written for a brass band, an English brass band, which consisted of cornets, a couple of trumpets, E-flat horns, tubas, euphoniums, a little bit of percussion, and it's been rearranged for the full concert band, so we're kind of borrowing that tradition there. And it's a simple prelude, a simple Siciliano, a dance, an Italian dance, and then a fast-paced rondo. The next selection is a little bit strange, probably for the audience. It's written by Alan Hovhaness, who is an American-born composer of Armenian descent. It was written in 1963 for the American Society of Metallurgists. The piece calls for 6 flutes, 3 trombones, and then 5 percussionists, all playing instruments that have metal as the sound: bells, 2 vibraphones, tam-tam or gong, and chimes. And there's a lot of experimentation in the sound. There are a lot of canons at the unison, a lot of pitch bending going on, as the trombones have that slide that they can do and do pitch bending. And then the themes and ideas are based off of Hovhaness's exploration of Japanese show flute music or traditional religious performance materials. It'll be a very interesting presentation of a small chamber group. After that piece, David Vining, our guest soloist, is going to do some fun stuff with us. He's doing a medley selection of Unforgettable and Mona Lisa, made popular, of course, by Nat King Cole. And then he's going to perform a very standard theme and variations on Bluebells of Scotland by Arthur Pryor, who was the principal trombonist of the Sousa Band, and then later went on to create his own very professional, very very profitable professional band. And that piece will just be a lot of enjoyment, a lot of fun. We're encouraging the audience that after each variation happens, as in the tradition of the 1900s, to applaud for the soloist and the showing off of their technique, so that while the band's doing their little interlude, the audience is just yay for the soloist and everything that way. David Vining is coming to us from the University of Arizona. He's here in a residency that starts up on Friday. He's got a recital on Friday night. He's got a clinic that he's doing on Saturday, and of course he's joining us for the concert on Sunday. And then we'll finish our program with a piece called Tempered Steel. And when you temper a metal, you're folding it over, you're hammering it down, you're creating a uniformity throughout that texture. And this piece sounds about like a metal worker hammering on what's going on. So for about 5 minutes, there's going to be quite a bit of loud, quite a bit of energy going on, and it's going to be the largest ensemble size for what you're going to hear in that concert. And that's how we're going to close our program.
It sounds like it's a very ambitious program this early in the semester. Are the students ready for this?
They will be ready for this. Now, we have a very limited rehearsal schedule, just like all of our ensembles do. But I find with the Wind Symphony, when we do something that's a little bit more ambitious, that has a little bit more of a specific programmatic goal to it, they get more out of the experience. They understand that each of these pieces has a relationship to one another, and this year we're trying something new. We're using a pool rotation of players. So not every member of the Wind Symphony is performing on all of these selections. Some people are fortunate enough to perform on all of them, but there are some people that will be in and out. So we've got, you know, as small of an ensemble as 8 and as many as 63 on the stage throughout the course of the concert. So you're going to hear a variety of different qualities of sounds that happen. I think that's making it very easy for the students to put things together and to make a very, very respectable presentation this early on in the season.
Why is this important for the students to have this experience?
Well, the majority of the Wind Symphony are students that are training to be future music educators. And the ensemble experience, the act of bringing a bunch of different people together to create one unified concept, is a process they're going to be doing in their future professional lives on a regular basis, whether it's starting with sixth graders and saying, here's how we assemble this clarinet and not break it, to presenting that first concert where mom and dad are just thrilled to death that they got there in one piece and they can do something, to parents and friends who are of our members of the Wind Symphony that are just amazed as to how much they can put together so quickly. And I think sometimes our students forget how much they do in such a short amount of time. It is a stressful moment, but it's rewarding at the same time when the audience turns around and applauds And that's the gratification, that's the thank you moment, and that's the intrinsic nature about any art form, but particularly when we're working on training our music educators for the future, how vital that ensemble audience response connection is. And you know, one of those great ways is having you interview me right now and talking about the event, and having people hear something in a language that we're all comfortable with, and then going and experiencing the musical language and that shared moment that way. So that's, for me, that's the main reason why we do what we do.
Where and when will the concert be?
The concert will be at the Ron Houston Center for the Performing Arts on the Mary Lynn Stage. It's this upcoming Sunday, October 4th. It's at 3 p.m. Seating, there'll be plenty of seating available. It's a free concert. There will be a reception following, so if you want to speak with any of the members or our guest artist and say thank you or how much you enjoyed what was going on with the concert, we invite you to hang around for the reception. And we just enjoy it. There'll be a brief little bit of pauses between each of those numbers as we reset the stage, not a formal intermission. Come, bring the family. You know, don't dress formal, just dress comfortably to enjoy some good music.
Carl Kling is the director of bands at Northwest Missouri State University. Saturday, Northwest Missouri State University will be host to the Northwest Powwow. Dr. Barbara Crossland is one of the organizers of the event.
The Northwest Powwow is a celebration of Native American culture, and it's an awesome event. I hope everybody can come. You'll see lots of music, lots of dancing, lots of camaraderie among Native peoples.
You say Native peoples, but who will be here for that?
We're not sure who is going to come until they actually show up, but normally we have Native people, dancers, singers, drummers from as far away as California. Our head lady dancer is from Idaho. It's difficult to predict, but I predict that we'll have people from a great many states.
Why do they come together for this?
To celebrate our culture and our history.
And how is it that they celebrate it?
Through dance and singing and being together as a family.
Is this something that anyone can attend to enjoy?
Oh, yes. We hope everyone attends and enjoys it.
What can we see when we attend this?
You'll see lots of different types of dancing, and you'll see children who are learning from their ancestors. It's passed down from grandmother to grandchild and continues throughout the generations. We'll have dancers in different categories, and they'll be competing in contests to win prize money. We'll have the little tiny tots, which of course is my favorite.
How important is it to have an event like this for Native Americans?
It's very important, especially here where we have some Native American students on our campus. It validates their culture, and it gives them an opportunity to share that culture with their friends and classmates.
How important is it for visitors to come and see this?
I think it's important because we are surrounded by Native people, whether you realize it or not. They're your neighbors and your friends, and you go to church with them, and you are at the grocery store with them. And you need to understand that we're not a dead people. It's not a dead culture. We're here today, and we plan to be here forever. So it's wonderful that you can share with us what our family history is.
Dr. Barbara Crossland is an organizer of this weekend's powwow. The Northwest Powwow will be Saturday at Lampkin Gym on the Northwest campus. The first grand entry will be at 1 o'clock. The second grand entry will be at 6 o'clock. Visitors can come and go to the event as they please, and the powwow will end by 10 o'clock. Voices of America in St. Joseph offers area men the opportunity to sing and perform. The award-winning group was founded in the 1950s. One of the founders is now the group's vice president for membership, Byron Myers.
It's a men's a cappella choir, and or chorus, if you choose to call it that. And being a cappella, we sing several styles of music. But when we enter in a competition, we're into barbershop style music.
Do you know how long the chorus has been together?
Well, it depends on what name you use. We have morphed through names because generationally things change, and we want to stay with the times. We started in 1957 as the Pony Expressmen, and as that group began to dwindle, we became the American Barber Boys, and we kind of came back and restarted ourselves, so to speak, because we had a lot of young people in it. And then those people have grown older, and we could now call ourselves Voices of America. I think it's a little bit unusual that St. Joseph, the size of the community, would have a chorus that has been so successful through. I mean, we're going in our 53rd year of being here, and we've had a lot of success in those 53 years.
Is it a barbershop chorus, or do you perform other types of music?
No, we do perform other kinds of music. We even have one piece that we've used as a very big piece, and we use piano with it. It requires that.
How many members can we see performing?
Oh, you'll see anywhere from 40 to 80. It depends on how interested people are in what we're currently doing. And it's a good, solid group.
Is this a volunteer organization?
Oh, it's all volunteer. And actually, it's part of the chorus is actually part of a chapter of the Barbershop Harmony Society. But we're a little different than some of the other choruses in that organization in that we do non-barbershop as well.
Do you compete?
We do compete, and we have done well in competition. International competition, when you have a chorus that places fifth internationally, which we did one time, you're talking about 800 and some odd choruses in the United States and Canada, plus the ones that come from the European and Australia.
Why do men become involved in this? What's the attraction of being a member of this group?
Well, I think as a singer, you want to be fulfilled in having that opportunity. We also, once you have a sense of success in your performance, that's kind of like cement that holds the bricks together. People want to be part of something that's successful.
Are you ever looking for new members?
We're always looking for new members. We don't have emphasis times when we seek membership. We seek members every week. You know, we would anticipate the opportunity to have a guest and to participate with us.
How can somebody join you?
Well, you would need to know where we're meeting, which currently in St. Joseph is Our Lady of Guadalupe. It's actually at the corner of Leonard Road and Frederick Boulevard. And we meet on Tuesdays. We usually arrive about 7:15. Rehearsal meeting starts at 7:30, usually through about 9:30.
There's nobody they have to contact? They can just show up that evening?
They can just show up.
Somebody interested in sticking with a group, what type of time commitment is involved?
Well, let's just take an average person who joins. You're going to have weekly rehearsals. We also prepare for two shows a year. We do one in Christmas. We do one in the spring. In addition to that, if we choose to do so, we enter a competition. That competition might require one or possibly two full Saturdays where we'll bring outside coaches in. I mean, from someplace in the United States, they fly in. We work with them all day long, and they help us improve in whatever it is we feel we need improvement in. Then we have a district competition. Normally that would take a Friday evening, Saturday, back home on Sunday, depending upon where it is. And the international competition is over the 4th of July week. So if you were fortunate enough to be able to go to international, you would be there probably on Wednesday through Saturday, come home on Sunday.
Are you preparing for any competition or preparing for any kind of concert now?
We're going to be starting work on Christmas. That would be probably the second week in December, and we'll have advertisements out so people will know when it is. Once we finish that, as we start the new year, then we'll start preparation for a spring show. And that spring show is going to be late this year. In fact, it's so late, it's not spring. It's it's going to be the first week in June. And the trouble was we couldn't get a venue. We had to find a venue that was open, so it pushed it.
How do you choose the music for these concerts? Is there a group of men who determine what kind of music you'll perform, or how do you go about that?
Well, having once been the director, actually the director's responsibility is to seek repertoire that they feel would fit the voicing of the chorus and something that would have enough interest to keep people coming. There always has to be some kind of a challenge. You know, if we don't have a challenge, then people get bored and they don't come. So the director, I would say that he calls on other people to give input. I've done so with our current director. We have assistant directors who also give input. So, it's not just a singular person, but in the end, he makes that decision.
Who is the director, and can you give me some of his background?
Well, his name is Paul Hart. He has a master's degree from the University of Missouri, KC. Paul's a wonderful bass singer as well. He's relatively new to us. I think now he's probably 6 months standing in front of us waving his arms. And we have Sean Agnew, who's assistant director. He also is working on a master's in choral music, University of Missouri at Kansas City. And I've been known to step in case they weren't there.
Again, men interested in joining the chorus can attend any Tuesday night rehearsal at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church at the corner of Leonard Road and Frederick Boulevard in St. Joseph. Rehearsals begin at 7:30.
In the 1970s, science fiction films were relegated to the B-movie category, mostly horror movies in disguise with aliens instead of monsters. But after Stanley Kubrick created new types of special effects for 2001: A Space Odyssey and George Lucas stunned us all with Star Wars, science fiction movies became a staple. Two in distribution right now are Surrogates and Pandorum. Science fiction plots fall into a few types. One that appears most frequently is the robot or computer versus people plot. So it goes in Surrogates, with a twist. Here we have a society of the future in which people can stay at home in bed, hooked into a machine while their minds are linked to a robot surrogate. They get to feel everything the robot feels, except pain, of course, and see everything it sees. In effect, they are the robot. Also, the robots are super strong. They don't leap tall buildings with a single bound, but they're well beyond human in strength and endurance. So, you have a few too many pounds? Are things sagging a bit with the passage of years? Have both the muscles and the hair disappeared? No problem. You can order a robot surrogate to walk around in, so to speak, and be drop-dead beautiful or macho muscular. Boy, I gotta get me one of those. So, what's the problem? There's no crime and no poverty. But some people hate the idea of surrogates. One group, secessionists who live in their own area, are led by a cult prophet figure who preaches against the cybernetic society. None of them inhabit robots. Also, some who aren't secessionists have their doubts. Policeman Tom Greer has his surrogate, but he doesn't much like the concept and wants his middle-aged wife to be with him in their own bodies instead of the hottie model her mind inhabits. So, then, when the secessionist not only destroys a robot with a new weapon, but kills the person whose mind inhabits it, supposedly an impossibility, the action heats up. Greer is an investigating officer, and we follow him in his sleuthing. He discovers a conspiracy that would kill everyone who uses a surrogate. The special effects are sort of funny. Bruce Willis, who's no longer a model of masculine beauty, plays Greer. We see him at the start occupying his robot, looking like a 25-year-old version of Willis with hair and trim body. Then we see the real Greer, who is and looks like the aging Willis we know and love, bald and getting pudgy. Sergeant's plot is derivative with a good bit of Isaac Asimov in his robot detective novels, A Dollop of 2001, and some touches of Blade Runner. If you buy into the premise, the plot holds together reasonably well. I thought it was entertaining and even a little thoughtful in its suggestions about human nature and potential. Pandorum enacts another standard science fiction plot, the exploration of space. The opening shots with text on screen show the explosion of population on Earth that leads to wars or resources. These conflicts lead to the destruction of Earth in the mid-21st century. But a habitable planet has been found way out there, and an enormous spaceship is on its way, with thousands of colonists in stasis. Crew members take turns being in stasis and on duty. When the two central characters, Peyton and Bauer, come out of it, they can remember nothing, a common result of being put under for long periods. Trouble is, there's trouble. The ship's power is erratic, and they can't remember how to control it. So Bauer goes on an odyssey through the huge vessel, trying to get to the control room and eventually recovering his memory. What he finds on the huge ships amounts to a fallen civilization. There are a few live people, and these live in the most primitive conditions. Then there are the flesh-eating mutants who actually control the passageways. Bauer eventually meets four people who travel with him on his odyssey to try and save things. Pandorum is reminiscent of the first Alien movie with the mutants in place of the hungry insectile alien. In effect, Pandorum turns into a version of the zombie movie so popular these days. The trouble is, it never explains very fully why the mutants are there. Are they crew members who somehow changed? If so, why are there so many of them when only a limited number of crew are out of stasis? And how could so many of them live with so little man flesh to eat? They seem just there to make Bauer's odyssey more exciting. The plot doesn't bear up to too much thinking, but the film creates a quite scary and claustrophobic environment. Those who like horror movies will probably enjoy it. Neither of these movies is especially powerful, but Sergeants is a respectable thriller and a good background for munching popcorn, so I'll give it 3 stars out of 5. Those who like films that make them jump will enjoy Pandorum, and it builds some suspense as we and the survivors try to figure out what happened to the ship. I award Pandorum 2.5 stars out of 5.
That was KXCV KRNW movie reviewer Dr. Carol Fry. You can find information about these events and links to art organizations on the KXCV KRNW website at kxcv.org. You can also listen to archived editions of this program by clicking on the Now Showing link on our homepage. Please join us again next Thursday. In the meantime, have a great weekend. For KXCV KRNW, I'm Patty Hawley.